So we're not recording. It's not
so, I just asked the question that I asked. There's only two questions that I asked before we start any episode, and that's, is there anything off limits? I didn't ask him if there was any time frame, because I'm keeping this guy as long as I possibly can. We met, it's been, I would say, probably about 8 months ago, and I connected with him right off the bat. I studied him on the plane. He didn't know this. I studied him, studied his wife, knew what they did. And when I walked in, I just made a joke, and it was incredible because we connected not just on a I know what you do, I respect what you do, but on a heart level. And you guys are going to see that this guy is all heart, but also is not afraid to work. He just released a book. I've got it sitting around here somewhere. Where's it at, Justin?
You had it.
Did I set it down somewhere? It's right over there. Right. So he just released a book. It's called Now, and Now it's never outworked. And there's a lot of people who have monikers, and a lot of people who are like, you know, oh, I live by this mantra, and they don't live by it at all. They just created an acronym, and they didn't know what it meant. This is one of the few people that actually lives the message that he's talking about. And he happens to be an Air Force veteran. My pops was in the Air Force, so I like him even more. Welcome to the show, Mr. Justin Lotfi. I said it right.
You did say it. If I remember right, when we first met you, you said, I promise I'm not homeless. My name's Kelly.
Was that the first thing that
yes,
I said?
Yes, you walked up to my wife, and you know I'm like a distance away, so you see this man with dreadlocks walk up to my wife and say, I'm not homeless. I promise this is a safe space. Like, let me come see who this is.
Well, I think the big thing was is a lot of times appearance, right? We were at a financial freedom conference. It's all for veterans. I walk in. I ain't looking like a veteran. You know what I mean?
I'm not one to assume you're not a veteran. Like, you might have gone full speed far away from the military.
Full speed. This is yeah. far away from the yeah. military is what you're saying?
Because most people go the beard and they're like, okay. But then you're like, you know what? I can do dreadlocks. If I could do dreadlocks, I might. But it's not a choice of mine, but that's as far away from military regs as you could get. So who knows?
Well, and I think the other thing that I wanted to make sure of is that your wife is very beautiful, incredibly beautiful. When I walk up, a lot of times, you know, masculine machismo men, and I connect with their wife first, they're like, yo, yo, bro, what's going on? So I wanted to make sure that you didn't think that I was looking for some change or some coffee or anything like that, and that I was there for a purpose.
And that's a fair assessment. I was like, wait a sec, who is this walking up towards my wife right now?
So tell me how, you know, real estate and the military, how they connect.
Man, I'll tell you, I was in a place that I felt stuck. Okay, so I had kind of followed your original path.
Yeah.
You get out the military, and a military officer especially, they say, well, you go into operations. You're used to doing operations. Yeah. That's the logical next step. So I did that. I went to Amazon, went into operations, worked my way up until I was an executive at this company. And then I was at this point. I said, now what do I do? Like, where do we go from here? And so I just started reaching out to different people, different mentors, and said, how do I find – I got to find a way to grow because I don't want to go back to a big company. And someone pointed me towards real estate.
Why didn't you want to go back to a big company?
I liked working at Amazon because it was such a fast-paced learning environment. But this last company that I worked for was very God-centered, like very Christian, very personal.
Yeah.
So like I knew the owners, like him, their son and I ran the company together. It was very like a family environment. And you don't get that in a big company. It kind of gets lost in the wickets. And so I knew I didn't want to go back that route. But yet from where I was, that was the only way I could grow that I knew at the time.
What were the skill sets that you had an unfair advantage when you came out of the military and being an officer? You just flexed on that. I just wanted you all to hear the low key flex that he did just a second ago.
It's like a,
because I said military, you were like, yeah, being an officer.
I'll tell you though, I was like self-hating officer. Like I went to the Air Force Academy, but I will be the first person to trash talk on Academy grads because I was prior enlisted.
Okay.
And so when I first got there, I got introduced to a cadet who was like, yeah, about every 2 out of 5 cadets are a-holes. And I was like, well, that checks. Right? I learned that in the way. And so then I became an officer, and I was like, wow, man, I really...
Did you become an a-hole?
No, I just really missed being enlisted.
Are you sure?
I think so. I mean...
How long were you enlisted?
Three years.
When you became an officer, because you can't fraternize, right?
Right.
Did you?
Well, so it's a little bit different.
We won't release this to anyone. It's just between you and I. If you just want to tell me, I'll never tell anyone.
I'll tell you, when you get into like special warfare and different combat teams, your first 4 years, you get to just be one of the guys in the stack and like one of the guys on the team.
Okay.
And then after 4 years, you kind of take on this managerial role and you become a captain and you're more like in charge. I got out at year five because I was like, I loved being like one of the guys in the stack, like going to the bar and being able to do all the fun things with the team.
Yeah.
At the point that I couldn't do that anymore was when I realized, okay, this isn't where I want to be. Like, this isn't the path I want to take anymore.
Did you ever roll up on like a NCO?
I can't tell you that.
You know? Hypothetically, did you ever make someone do push-ups when you walked by them?
No. I will actually, so I'll tell you a story. I have one of my best friends. His name's Rich, and I talk about him in the book. He was one of my airmen. So he was one of the guys on my team. And Rich is about, I don't know, 6-7 years younger than me.
Okay.
And I forget what it was. I asked him to do, like, go find something, go, I think it was like find a TV mount. We're putting together the new team room. I said, hey, go find a TV mount. And he looks all over. He said, hey, LT, I can't find it. There's no TV mount in the squadron. And I said, well, are you sure? Like, are you positive? He said, yep. No TV mount.
Did you just make your own nickname?
What?
Just a second ago.
Oh, no.
You referred to yourself as something.
So he referred to me.
Only pro wrestlers do that. You know that, right?
He referred to me as LT, short for lieutenant.
Okay, so yeah. First you hit me with the officer thing. Yeah. That's some, you know, you want to make sure that I know that.
I wanted and then to, you gotta, to flex, you got like you own, said, just yeah, tell you.
That's how you yeah. That's how you do it. Okay, yeah. Is there going to be more flexing throughout the time?
Of course.
That
that's what we already talked okay. about you coming up on my website. Gotta make sure. To flex up in here.
All right, LT. So to keep going with this when I interview
So
which I will a lot.
That's
I'll
fair.
Probably do that.
That's a time. Fair point. Okay. So I went and I found this TV mount, and I said, you said this wasn't anywhere in the building. Like, here it is. And so I asked him to go take this medicine ball, like, up a hill that was about half a mile away, right? I'll tell you, Rich and I today, he's one of my best friends. Like, he is the person that, you know, we've – willed our kids to, like, God forbid anything
yeah.
go wrong with Dre and I. And like, he's the first person I call for anything. Uh-huh. But I've never been one of those people to just be like, yo, push ups. But that exists.
But
like,
you
that happens.
You could do that. But you just didn't.
I guess you could. There would have been, I don't know if you could do that today. You could do that before.
You could do that before.
Yeah.
I think when my pop was in, I think you could.
Oh, 100%. 100%.
Do you see any value in being able to do that?
No, I think I found value in, like, doing it with them.
Okay. Like, you doing know. The push-ups with them.
Right.
Like, hey, give me 20. I'll do them with yeah. you. Yeah.
Like, we were driving
out
of...
It takes away the sting, though.
No, you just have to get really good at push-ups if you're going to be that person.
Okay.
Like, I would never challenge Rich to a run because he's way faster than me. And so, you're like, all right, let's go for a run. Like, I would end up hurting more than he would, you know. But I would take him in the pool because I know I could outswim him. So I got to play to my strengths if we're going to play that game.
I want to talk about theory and reality, because the theory yeah. of when you get into the military is like, oh, yeah, I'm excited. I'm going to serve my country. And then going to war is completely different. Or is it?
I think the thing that people forget about the military is that every job that exists out in the world exists in the military. You want to be a photographer in the military, you can be a photographer. You want to work at the gym in the military, like, you can just work at the gym. You know, so when you think about the military, you got to think about it as an entire world and in itself,
okay.
where you have nurses and cops. And, like, every function that is needed to run a town exists in the military as well. And it's not just a bunch of people going to bring the fight. Everyone is connected in that. Every effort helps that happen. But about 1% of the military goes forward, if that makes sense.
So why is it, if that's the world, which I grew up in that part of it, not being in the military, I have obviously the utmost respect. My pops was in it. I was a dependent. Why is it so hard for people to transition out? Because a lot of times people, you see one of two things. You either see people jump to the stratosphere, so you see those, and then you see the other people that are kind of like, I don't really know what to do, where to go, and how to apply this when, I mean, literally, it's probably the greatest training in the whole entire world when it comes to business, when it comes to resilience, when it comes to all those things.
I think there's two reasons in there. First, when you get out of the military, you try to put everything on a resume. Like, you find all these keywords and you're thinking, okay, these are all the things that I fit. this is my resume. So this is, these are all the jobs that I can do based on everything that's on that piece of paper. But what that piece of paper doesn't show is like an 18-year-old who's handed a wrench and said, fix this $24 million jet. Or a 28-year-old who then takes over combat operations across the entire country, like in the Middle East. Those things happen. So people in the military always get asked to do things that other people would look at as impossible or ridiculous, but they do it and they make it happen. And then they try to put that on a piece of paper and it doesn't translate. It doesn't show. Just like I talked about earlier, you get out like, okay, operations. What does that really mean? And so you shortcut yourself or you shorthand yourself of what you're able to do outside of the military because you try to fit what could fit on that paper. And then the other thing that people miss is community. Like in the military, you have this town, you've got this family, the people that were in the team room are still some of my best friends. And then you get out of that and you're forced to try to make friends and try to find people who are like-minded. And it's a lot harder than when you're just put in this room of people who are all like-minded, all here fighting for the same thing, working on the same thing every single day.
Talk to me about the advantages. We talked about the Veterans for Financial Freedom when we did it in Las Vegas. And one of the things that I think that is a superpower that most veterans don't understand is that if you grew up in the military, you lived on a military base, you live in the most eclectic culture of all time. Meaning your neighbor could be black and Japanese. His mom could be from Japan. His dad be from, you know, wherever. There's such a mix and eclectic, but when we grow up and we say, like Carlsbad, you're around people who are from Carlsbad, not from all over the world. It's the only place, what I thought, or what I realized, was the only place where you get to be around everyone, and you have to be around everyone, and you have to be forced into friendships, things like that. What are some of the other superpowers that the veterans have when they get out that a lot of times they don't understand?
I think it's just what we talked about earlier is most people don't realize that at some point in the military, you were asked to do something that's impossible.
Or how, like, can you quantify that?
Exactly. And so people don't realize you've already seen what you're capable of. You've already seen that you can do these things that if I described it to you, you'd be like, wow, that's ridiculous. But in the military, if they get told to do something, it's like, okay, I'm going to make that happen. There's no questioning. It just, they make it happen. How do you take that and then put it out into the world? That's where the gap is.
So when I look at you, I look at a very structured man. I think of a very disciplined guy. You're training for a triathlon right now, yep. Right? You haven't flexed on that yet, but I will for you because I knew you were going
to. I
come
needed
up
to
at
keep it
point.
In the pocket.
For yeah, later. You were going to bring it up later and be like, "How many triathlons right. have you done?" None. but I have a friend who does one. I've stayed at Holiday Inn Express, so it seems to work out. But that, let's go back to the theory and versus reality. A lot of people have theories, but even your book, Never Outworked. There's a theory of that, but then there's, I look at you, very accomplished, very disciplined, all those things. But it's not because your circumstances were the best in the world, right?
Right.
I mean, from where you started off, when did you start to, did the theory come first or did the reality come first?
Honestly, there was no theory. There was more anger. I spent so much of my life angry and just trying to prove that I could accomplish things.
Who were you angry at?
At life. Honestly, I was angry. I remember even in high school where people would be talking about all their problems like, oh, my Infiniti broke down or, I've got to find this dress for prom, like things that high school problems, normal, like high school problems. And I would get so angry because I was comparing myself to their problems. And I was like, how are you even complaining about that? And so I, for a while, was angry at like what life dealt me. And through that, I pushed very far. Like I pushed very far in that, I want to prove that I can do things in this world. And it wasn't until I really realized that you can go very far on anger. You can go so much further on forgiveness and love and understanding that, like, okay, God wanted to work with me during this time. God wanted to put that one-on-one time so that I could then sit down and relate to you about whatever it is that you're going through. I need to forgive, and love. And then that capability, like that, those doors just burst open in ways I never even thought about. So, you know, you think about theory, like, okay, I want this to happen. I need to put in this work for it to happen. And like we've talked about before, people fall in love with the product and don't always think about the process.
Well, and again, I think that that's a lot of times, you know, people live by bumper stickers. That's why I admire you, is because when I think of those bumper stickers, if you say any of them, I know you're living it, right? So take us to the abuse early on. In the book, it was great because you list it out, and a lot of times people aren't vulnerable enough to be able to talk about it. I mean, especially you think about military, man, I'm a man, you know, everything like that. But take us back to young Justin and take us back to the abuse.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, just to kind of hit on what you just said, that was my goal for a while, was to be that stoic, manly man, like who could put back whiskey and be amongst men. Like that was this image that I chased for a long time because of anger. But I'll tell you, like, as a kid, I didn't grow up in the best of circumstances, but it's because of this cycle, you know, that a lot of parents find themselves in, is you grow up in, we'll call it an abusive home, and then you're angry, and then you don't ever forgive, and so then you end up taking that anger and portraying that onto your children, who then, if they never stop and, like, forgive and love, then it just keeps going, right? And this was something I had to realize. This was something I didn't realize until I was, like, 28.
So when you're a kid, though, a lot of times you don't realize that if your parent is being mean to you, or maybe they're abusive to you, or they have actions that you don't think are great, it's most of the time it's because of the cycles that they hit when you're dealing with it, though. When you're 12, 13 years old, 9 years old, what's going through your brain as you're dealing with these things?
I think every kid is reaching out for love. Like, they're trying to find ways to grasp your attention as a parent to get you to love them. And so, like, I have toddlers right now, and if I'm busy and they want my love, they're going to yell out, or they're going to cry, or whatever. And it's going to seem outlandish. And I was no different, you know, as a teenager, especially, I felt this lack of love in my life. And so I would, you know, do ridiculous things to get attention, or try to get attention. And I would usually get in trouble. So I'll tell you, like, we talk about owning a business now.
Yeah.
My first business was in middle school. In middle school, I learned, like, Microsoft Word's becoming this great thing. I learned that I could use Microsoft Word to perfectly replicate my my report card. And I was a terrible student. And so then I, like, line for line, make the perfect report card.
Uh-huh.
On top of this, we're starting to be able to use the internet and make web pages. And so then I make a web page, because not only is this going to be useful to me, this has got to get out, put to everybody. And so I make a web page. You don't like your report card? Like, come see Justin Lotfi. He will make perfect report cards for Harrington Middle School, $20. And I felt super accomplished until I got my ass whooped because it's on the internet and I got it caught. Like,
how'd you get caught?
I got ratted out.
Did the snitch get stitches?
We weren't friends after that. We were 11 years old. We had a little beef. He wouldn't even go to school with me. This kid wasn't even in my middle school.
He didn't go to school and he ratted you out?
I think he was just feeling like he couldn't get a report card, so it wasn't fair.
You didn't open it up to other schools?
I didn't know other schools' report card yet. I had to start with my market.
Why didn't you look in the...
You have to start with your market first before you try to branch out.
Okay, all right. There we go.
But I'm reaching out.
So how do you get caught? Like, so he rats you out to who?
To his mom. So I'm feeling super...
Take us through that, because Who pulls you? Is it mama grabs you?
Yeah, so I'm feeling super accomplished because I started my own business. I've got a web page now, which is huge.
If you've got a web page, like, that's
In the 90s, early 2000s, you got a web page? Like, yeah, it's huge.
Straight weird science stuff.
I'm ready. Like, yeah. I'm a businessman.
Of course.
In middle school.
Bezos.
And so I remember I'm sitting in the basement watching Fresh Prince because that was my favorite show. And the phone goes off, and the phone is probably like the distance from me to you.
Uh-huh.
But I know, like, this probably isn't for me, and I'm watching Fresh Prince. I don't want to get off the couch. If it's for me, like, someone will yell.
Yeah.
And so it goes off. Don't answer it. Cool. Not for me. And then I hear, like, my mother just scream from upstairs, like, Justin, get your ass upstairs.
She wasn't like in Fresh Prince.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't. I was like, man, this is a good episode. Dude, this is not good news, right? And so
do
I
you remember the episode, what was happening?
No, I don't.
You don't?
I don't. I just, I remember the feeling. I remember I was laying on the couch, like feet to the TV, just watching Fresh Prince, and I hear it, and I was like, man, this isn't good.
Did you know at that time, because we have that Spidey sense.
No.
No? You were deflecting?
No, I mean, I knew I was in trouble.
Okay.
But I got in trouble a lot as a kid.
Okay, all right. So you were hoping that it wasn't, was it even in the back of your mind, like she might have found my $1 million webpage?
Maybe, but it was, I was feeling accomplished. I felt like I had done something great.
You started your own
business. Made a product.
How many report cards did you sell?
None. Zero report cards.
You got
sold.
Your ass beat for nothing?
Yeah.
For zero.
No report cards got sold.
Okay.
Yeah.
How were you going to deliver them? Mail?
Hand them out in school. Like if somebody.
How are they going to pay?
$20, man. Just give me.
Just give you
cash.
$20.
Yeah.
So you had a web page, but you got to show up and pay me cash.
Yeah. I mean, we didn't have like Venmo at that point.
Didn't have PayPal. What year
was
this?
May have. 2000, okay. Maybe.
You're young.
Yeah, I know.
I realized in men's group this morning I could be your dad.
I mean, you.
I could. My mom was 15 when she when she got pregnant with my brother. I'm from Utah.
That's fair.
Yeah.
And you're Mexican, so.
Yeah. So
15 is like the normal age to start.
Actually,
having
I would be old for that. They'd be like, "Oh, what are you doing with your life?"
You should have had three children by now.
We're gonna get canceled because of that. They're gonna check and see if I'm actually Mexican. You could check the background. I've had people get mad at me for that one.
Really?
Yeah. I spoke at a place and I didn't say that I was Mexican before I made a joke, and I made the joke and it didn't land well at all. It was funny to me, and what my mom taught me was if one person laughs, it's actually a funny joke.
That's fair.
So that helped me. So go back to, she yells at you, you go upstairs. Does she start whooping you right away, or does she start asking?
Oh, it was immediate. No.
She just start back?
As soon as I got, like, within striking distance.
What does she start hitting you with, hands?
Yeah.
She starts laying hands?
Yeah.
Smack, good hands?
Smack straight across the face. Okay. Like.
Were you at the point, how old are you at this time?
10, 11.
Were you at the point where you're like, that didn't hurt, mom?
No, I was a really tiny kid.
Okay.
Like I think I might have been 100 pounds soaking wet.
Okay.
And she was a personal trainer.
Oh, so she came in.
Yeah.
So and she then would, so after the slap, what happens? She kick? Does
she kick too? Usually, believe it or not, I had long hair at this point in my life.
Yes.
You know, so
just in the back.
Yeah. So she was able to grab
just
and,
in the back?
And like no, of course no? not. No, I had like. I didn't surf, but grew up in Jersey, and so, you know, had the long hair, and I was a swimmer, so
you'd
be like.
Did you flip it a lot?
Of course. Get to the wall.
Okay.
Flip it back.
You know. Okay, so she hit you with a slap.
Yeah.
She come with another? She go come with a combo?
Yeah, I mean, we went to the point where, like, I remember I was laying on the ground, and I got one last hit, and then I got sent back to my room.
Is she yelling while she, is she like, don't do a report card. I can't believe, is she saying stuff?
Honestly, I don't remember any sounds.
You don't remember, did you just hear
it? It was just like this flurry.
Okay.
And I remember seeing the report card and the website because we had the website up on the kitchen computer and like having that oh shit moment.
Yeah.
And then just flurry of attack and then sent to your room.
What's the lesson that you learned from it?
That's a tough one. I've never.
That's a pause. You didn't learn any lesson. That means that you're going to have to go through this thing again.
That's fair. I mean, everyone, I don't know. I've gotten a lot of ass whoopings in my life, so I feel like I've filled that box. I say that everyone needs to get their ass whooped at least once in their life, but like I filled that box in my life.
So at that point, you go to your room. Are you just angry that she caught you, or are you angry that she doesn't understand your business prowess?
To be honest, that was a really dark night for me. Like I knew what I was doing was wrong, you know, and that was accepted. But I got grounded a lot. So whenever I got grounded, I wasn't allowed to leave my room.
Did grounding do anything for you? Because most kids that I knew that got grounded, I never got grounded. Most kids just stewed and got worse. They just had worse behavior.
Yeah, because
I think a beating will, you got a beating and then, so you got the double whammy. But I think most of the time, this is just my own side, is if you get whooped, you'll remember it, and then you'll move on. If you get grounded, you're just in the room, and then you're just going to get madder. I don't think that it works.
Well, I always got both. They never came separately.
Right.
You wouldn't.
Is that another flex? Because I only got one?
Yeah, probably.
Okay.
I mean, but it's all right. You still grew up all right. Like, I stumbled through a little bit more. I don't know what your whole story is, but I don't know. I remember, that was a really dark night for me, just because I knew what I was doing was wrong. I didn't recognize at the time that I was really just seeking attention, like we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
You know, you do all these things to seek attention, and if we hope as parents that if you love your kids a lot, they'll like seek attention in positive ways, and if you don't love your kids a lot, like there's a higher chance you're going to seek attention in negative ways. I've always been a full speed kind of person, so like I full speed sought attention in negative ways.
Yeah.
You know, and so I remember that night. I was laying in bed and I was crying. It was thunderstorming. And the only thing I could think of was like, man, if this is really what life is like if this is the full spectrum, I don't want to do this anymore. And I wasn't suicidal. Like okay, I wasn't suicidal at the time. I just didn't want to live anymore. But then I had this thought of like, I wanted to go to church and
hold on.
I'm gonna take you there, I promise. So like I had this random thought of wanting to go to church, and I didn't grow up with church. So
you get beat, put in your room, you're going through this, hey, I don't wanna live, and then squirrel, church.
Yeah. And it was really like that progression, you know, and I never grew up with church. My stepdad was atheist, my mom at the time was atheist, my dad immigrated here from Egypt, so his parents and him were very Muslim.
Okay.
But a couple months prior, I was invited to youth group by one of my neighbors. So every Wednesday we'd go to youth group, we'd play football. And to be honest, there was a really cute girl there. So I thought like if I kept going and I showed my football prowess, like maybe I could get this girl to be my girlfriend. And
take care of her report card.
Yeah, obviously. You
know what I mean? Right off in the
sunset.
Be
the man, right? Yeah. So
buy the Clippers.
Exactly. So I remember thinking like, I really want to go to church, and that put me to sleep. Like I was able to go to sleep. And then the next morning, like I said, not allowed to leave the threshold of my bedroom, but down the hall from my room was my stepdad's office. And I saw he was in there. And so I went down to apologize to him. And, you know, he gave me like the disappointed dad speech. Like he said, you know, I'm really just disappointed in you because he paid me for grades I didn't get, so I was also stealing. And he's like, you know, I'd never thought that you would steal from me. And that's what really hit me when it came to lessons learned, you know, and just in why and being dishonest had those kind of layered effects that I didn't really think about. But when he said that to me, like that was a moment that I still remember today.
That's some that was deep. Like he had some Jedi Master stuff.
Yeah.
Did you have a retort to it at all? Like being a snide little kid when he said you're stealing from me? Were you like, ah, not really?
No.
Not at all. You were just, no. I'm caught, I'm done.
No, I said, I'm sorry, and he was like, look, I forgive you, but you're still grounded, so go back to your room.
Take us to this point. This was a part that reading in the book, I sat up. I have a couch. I want to paint the picture of it. It's a camel color. It's very beautiful. I like laying on it. Very comfortable. It's comfortable reading. Put on my glasses. Can't see that well. Don't judge me for it. Reading your book. I hit a place in the book that said, I'm not laughing because of what it is. This sucks that I'm laughing. Because it said, people are going to think I'm the most insensitive person in the world because I'm laughing during this part. I punched my mom in the face, and I was like, holy, I sat up. I was like, I'm not comfortable anymore. Is there people around? Did I just read that? Is this true? I know Justin. He seems like a nice guy. Now I don't really like him that much. I'm joking with you. But when I read, I was like, whoa, this was a turning point, though. Take us there.
It's okay to laugh because when my wife read it, she said she was laughing the whole time, like thinking about me doing all this stupid stuff as a kid.
Well, there's a buildup to it. Yeah. You're explaining all this stuff. And then I was like, as I'm reading it and I'm out of body experience because I'm comfortable. You took me out of being comfortable. I was on the couch. I was good. I had the pillow underneath my legs that was propped up a little bit. I was feeling
good for circulation. Yeah.
And then it said, I punched my mom in the face. I was like, what? Like, wait a second. Take us there.
So I don't want to paint her in a bad picture, you know, because she grew up in a very abusive household where, you know, her mom immigrated from Thailand. She was way out of her comfort zone, and her mom was an alcoholic. And yeah. And she grew up, like my mother grew up in this terrible environment and never really understood how to deal with that, like never learned past all of those points in her life. And I don't fault her for that, and so I don't want that to come across this way. You know, but when her and my stepdad got divorced, I was 15, and so I was at the point where I was like, okay, it's time for me to step up and be a man and take care of my mother and my two siblings, and so I moved in with them.
Uh-huh.
But I'll tell you, only lasted like 3 months because I was 15, like trying to find a job, cooking and cleaning for my siblings who were both 10 years younger than me. And my mother's like dealing with this depression and like crying in the closet, but then would also come out and just like rip me apart and tell me like everything I was doing was wrong as I'm 15, trying to step into this role that I really had no business being in. And so I lasted in that for 3 months before I was like, you know what? I want to go move back in with my stepdad.
Yeah.
And they lived 2 miles apart. And so we were all in this little Toyota Corolla, the four of us, like my mother, me, and my two siblings in the back.
Okay.
For 2 miles.
Stepdad wasn't in the car.
No, because we were going to his house. Okay. From the apartment that we lived in.
Got it.
And so there was a 2 mile stretch between these two places. And for 2 miles, like my mother's telling me, like, you're pathetic. You're never going to make it in life. You're taking the easy way out in life. And I'm 15. And she stops and slaps me while she's driving. And for the first time ever, like I like raised my hand up like I was going to do something. And I realized what I'm doing. I said, oh, let me put this back down in my lap. But it wasn't before she saw. And so she, you know, puffs up, said, do you want to hit me? Like, I know you want to hit me right now. Do it. And then hit me again. And she said, and I was like, no, like Kayla and Ryan are in the back seat. Why are you doing this? 5 and 4. Yeah.
So you're really like dad.
Right. You know, and like I said, we're 10 years apart and they're my closest siblings in age. And so then I get this for the rest of the mile, like that we go, just learning about how terrible of a person I am. And so they go inside and I'm unpacking everything out the Corolla that's mine. And I just have this anger brewing in me, like all of this pent up anger. And so once I got everything out of the car, I went around and I opened the door and I punched her in the face. Because I had it all built up, and it wasn't the right thing to do, but I'm 15, like with all these like raging emotions, mm-hmm. that I had to hold in for two, like the longest 2 miles of my life with my siblings in the back. And she came out and just started swinging. And I'll tell you, I boxed in college. This was like the most unorganized. This is what you'd see on like a commercial where everyone's like swinging their hands. It's really messy. So I don't think either one of us got a good shot. And after that, but we were fighting in front of the house until my stepdad came and broke it up.
What did your stepdad say to you at the time? Because I'm just thinking of my pop. I'm thinking about my pop in that situation. But go on. What did step pop do?
He just told me to get inside. Like he stopped it. He said, hey, you get inside, like, you go.
Okay.
And she drove off, like, yelling out the window that she was going to call my dad and call the cops. No, she was saying that she was going to call the cops.
Wow.
But she called my dad, who then called me and said he would call the cops if I ever did something like that.
How do you overcome when you hear from someone who you love? How do you overcome you're a piece of S, you're never going to amount to anything like that? Because there's a lot of people out there that hear this. And they're like, oh, it doesn't impact me.
But it does. Like, words are so powerful and they stick with you.
Especially from people who you value.
Right.
So how could a person start to overcome that?
I'll tell you, the thing I had to learn, and I really didn't learn this until after I deployed to Iraq and I came home and I was in therapy,
mm-hmm.
Was all of my life I only heard people's insults. So you could compliment me, tell me it was the greatest, like, you've got the greatest haircut in the world. Like, none of that I would hear. But if you said, you know, Justin, your posture was really bad on this podcast, like, that was something that would stick with me for years. And I learned that it just played into everything I was told as a kid. So all of these things that you get told when you're younger start to lay the foundation of what you're going to receive later. And if until you figure out how to forgive all of that, you're going to be stuck in this place. And I was, like I told you, I was so angry at life that it just drove me. And thankfully, like, I went into special warfare where that I was able to be violent. Like, it was a good use of anger, because we boxed and we wrestled and, like, I got to play with bombs and stuff. And so it was a good use of anger. But when I came out of that, I needed to figure out, like, why a different way to make energy that wasn't driven by anger. And so I had to learn to forgive. And for me, I had to really logically step through everything. I had to reach back and figure out from my grandma and my dad. I was like, you know, tell me everything that happened to my mother so that I can understand it. And that helped me understand why she was the way she was, helped me understand, like, why she was the way she was with us. And it helped me better understand myself.
How do you turn it on and off? Because I have a lot of friends who are special warfare. And when you go into doing what you did and you go to war and you're in those places, am I correct that you have to turn it off?
Yeah, of course. I mean,
and you have to turn another thing on.
Right.
Is that trained or is that something that you innately get, or are they conscious about teaching you it?
I think it's personality driven. So any one of those career fields, whether you talk about Air Force Special Warfare or Navy SEALs or Green Berets, like, every single one of them have a selection. Everyone has about a 70% failure rate. So 70% of the people.
70?
Yeah. And that's the people that start the pipeline in the first place. Like, in order to get into one of those career fields, you have to try out. And so there's a lot of gates before you find yourself in that position. Mm-hmm. And it helps create or find the right person that can click into this mode of, we'll call it performance. Like, it just put the blinders on and go, but then also click off. But it's not easy. Like, it's not something that comes without work later. Mm-hmm. Because you get exposed to these super dark places in the world and you see the ugliest things in the world, and figure out how to kind of work through that and compartmentalize it so that you can just live. Wow. is not an easy task.
What do you wish you could unlearn about warfare?
I don't have anything that I wish I'd unlearn, because I don't even think I wish I'd unlearn that, because the thing that I run into now is people will share with me things on the news and they're like, well, why aren't you worked up about this, you know, with whatever's going on here or there? And the thing I learned, I spent some time in Iraq, and then I would see what happened on the news, and it was different than what was happening where I was. So, you know, I'll tell you, one night while I was there, we got one rocket, like, just a single person shot a single rocket over the fence. And don't, like, think of that as, like, a huge deal. Think of it like a firework or like a bottle rocket. So it's really just trying to cause trouble.
Okay.
On the news, they made it sound like this rocket attack on the base. Like, terrorist rocket attack on this base. But that's because this sells. If I told you we had one rocket that got shot into nowhere and nothing happened, like, that's not a news story. And so the thing that I learned was that news in itself is just a product. Like, we're trying to promote something for people to buy, for people's attention. Mm-hmm. It doesn't always show what's happening in the world. So I really give it no value today when I see these terrible things that are getting shown on the news. Some of it's probably true, but I'm not digging into it enough to really tell you what is and what isn't.
Can anyone really prepare you in training for what you actually see when you're in the situation?
No. I got asked to read a book called On Killing before I deployed, and it was a book written by this Army Ranger who became a psychologist and really just broke down the romance of, and I call it romance because he said the way to describe, you know, taking another person's life is very similar to if you were trying to describe the intimacy felt between two people when they're, like, having sex to a virgin. Right, so trying to explain that connection and intimacy to somebody who's never been in it, like, that's the way they describe what's happening, like, when between two people and one person takes another person's life, you know. And so that was the closest thing that I could I could really say prepared me for that moment. Mm-hmm. But even still, like, there's so much going on when you're in that world. It's, you learn it when you're there.
Take us to the 92 Ford Probe.
The 90. I don't, there's not too much significance about this thing. We always bring it up, and I loved that car. 92 Ford Probe was my second car. You know, so prior to that, I had a 94 Pontiac Sunfire.
What color?
It was green.
Did you have neon lights on the bottom of it?
No, but it was a convertible.
Okay.
Which was super cool, okay. Right? Especially as a 16, 17-year-old, right? Yeah, it was super cool, like you said. But the Pontiac leaked. So I remember I was taking this girl out on a date, and it was raining, and the hood would leak. So I was like holding a towel up here as I'm driving the car. But I crashed it. They crashed because I ended up hydroplaning. I never changed the tires. And
safe.
And so for about 6 months, I didn't have a car.
Uh-huh.
And I lived outside of the school district. So I couldn't catch a bus to school. And I didn't have anyone to take me to school. So I had a math teacher who picked me up from my mother's house every day and drove me to school until I got that Ford Probe that I paid off every single month because I was working like 30 hours a week as a waiter to afford this Ford Probe, which was the coolest car ever because it's like the first sports car Ford had.
I remember the car. The car was, I mean, I've said, like, you were rich because if you had a Ford Probe back in that day, you were rich.
It was $2,000, and I paid that bill. I think it was like $400 a month.
Did you?
For like a year.
Like 17% interest?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
I'm just joking.
Yeah.
The recipe that you set up, I mean, when we talk about the abuse early on, we talk about the challenges that you have in your life, your failed business webpage, tech prowess, as I would say. You look at that, and then we go through living at a school district, your parents get divorced, all these things. This is a recipe for you to be super angry and then go into high-performance mode. It's like, it's almost a, how would I say, it would be the exact recipe for that. You see it all the time. And then you have this person who performs at this ridiculous level but is angry about every single result that they have. How did you get to the point where I see the way that you look at your wife? I see the way that you treat people. You have this humility. You don't have this, you told me I can't, so I'm going to show you. All the ingredients that you have in Justin would say that that's going to be the product, but it's not. Why?
You had said something once that has really resonated with me, and it was that, you know, God tells us that we can do everything, but it doesn't mean that we should do everything. So I learned, and I still believe, like, if you put something in front of me, I could get it done. Like, if I put enough work towards it, like, I know my own capabilities well enough to know that I can make that happen. But I learned that it doesn't mean that I should do everything. And so learning that along the way, like learning that I really shouldn't have been in operations. The only reason I went after it was because I was told, hey, get your MBA, like go into this path, work your way up. And this was like this unattainable thing that you can't, like you work to. You work all the way until you're an executive and then that's it. Like you hit that. And the only reason I went after it was because it was put in front of me as this mountain to climb. You know, when I started to realize that I wasn't really trying to chase myself, like I wasn't really trying to find the truest version of me. I was only really knocking down these pillars that people put in front of me. And then I instead looked inward and said, you know what, how do I find like the best version of me? That's when things really started to change in my life.
You have this innate ability. I noticed it at Prosperity Camp when we were there, and there was an introduction of you, and it was like, oh, Justin came from here and here and here. And they were talking about like all the base that you had come from. And when you came up, I was like, but Justin's a high level executive in his company. It didn't just come from this place and then just build this up. But you have this incredible, unique ability to allow every other person to shine around you. And you're okay with, I mean, because you've already flexed on me a couple times, but I mean, you could continue, you could do it for a whole day, weeks on end with people and the things that you've accomplished, but you don't, I want to tell you that I respect that because you don't hide behind those things. Where do you find that strength to do that?
I've had the same goal in everything I've done. You know, besides like whatever, climbing whatever mountains in front of me, you know, my goal, whether being in a fire team of four or being in charge of a $24 million company, my goal was always to have an impact on one person. Like when you look back on your life, usually there's four or five people in your life that you can say, so-and-so really changed my life. You know, for me, Mr. Tamborello, the math teacher that picked me up every day from school, really changed my life because he saw something in me that I didn't see in myself yet. Like I was still like in this mindset of, you know, I'm a terrible kid, like delinquent child, you know, but he saw something that I didn't know that I had in me. And so anytime I went about anything, my goal was to have that impact on one person. If I talked to 1,000 people and one person came back to me 4 years later and said, you know, Justin, what you said here really made an impact on me. That's been my whole goal every single time I take on anything.
Then do you feel kind of like a failure because you didn't help one person with a report card?
I'm thankful I didn't have let someone else get their ass beat. That's pretty much how that one works.
Well, I'm just saying, like, you set out with a mission.
That's true.
You know, you wanted to impact one person, and you didn't.
You're right. So, I thought I had created a product that would help more kids.
Yeah, but you didn't even help one Not person, even one. Justin. Just awful, awful human being. I can't even believe it. What do you wish that as a young person going to the military, like now you're the wise old age of 34, what do you wish that you would have heard when you went in?
I think...
Would you even have listened to it, though?
No, not at all. I remember seeing a picture of when I enlisted, and I was 19 years old. So at this point in life, I had gotten into college, got kicked out of college, was a door-to-door salesman, partied for a long time until I realized, you know what, I need to do something with my life, and then I enlisted in the Air Force.
Yeah.
Okay. And I saw a picture of myself kind of swearing in, and I looked like I really didn't want to be there. Like my hand was like half up instead of like fully ready to be there. You know, so I don't think I would have heard it at that point, you know, but when anytime somebody comes to me and asks like about the military and what they could do, you know, I tell people that it is a great place to really set your foundation. It's, you know, really figure out where you fit in the world because it's going to open up so many doors if you let it.
You learned some things about real estate in the last couple of years that really kind of unlocked a whole different life for you. Was it privileged information? Was it information that you can't get unless you look a certain way or that you've done a certain thing?
No, I think with real estate, what I love is all of the information you could ever need is out there. It's free. Like go look on BiggerPockets, go on YouTube, Google, anything that you could want to know about real estate exists for free on the internet.
Then why don't people do it?
Because you don't know where to look. That's the problem, is that real estate is such a giant venture.
Got it.
How do you understand where to start looking? You know, understanding that, you know, wherever you are in life, you either need to create cash or you need to invest cash.
Okay.
You know, and so real estate has both of those avenues. If you're in a creating cash mode, then maybe you want to do short-term rentals, wholesaling, flipping, like things that make lots of cash. If you want to do if you're in a place where you need to do passive income and, you know, tax savings, then you're investing in things that don't require a lot of work. You know, so understanding where you are first, and then understanding, okay, these are the different avenues that make the most sense. That's where people get caught up, and that's why I needed to reach out for help because I had no idea what to do.
What about the shortcuts that people say? Like you hear this all the time, like, come with me. I've got a shortcut, and you're not going to have to, you know, I'm going to take away all the work, and you're just going to end up, you know, watch me for 4 hours, and then you're going to be a millionaire too. Does any of that translate, or do you have to work hard in everything that you do?
In real estate, especially if you're just starting and you're trying to create cash, it is purely a numbers game. Like, you can be terrible. And I'll tell you, the first 80 offers I made on homes
were 80?
80. The first 80.
Okay.
First 80 offers I made on homes were absolute garbage.
Why didn't you have that type of resilience with your report card business?
That was the worst beating I received in my life. So that was like an immediate stop. Like, you're done this.
But you could have outworked it.
I could have outworked it. You're right.
Okay.
You're right.
So sometimes outworked.
That's fair. Most of the time outworking. Is what we mostly outwork.
Okay, so 80 offers. You put in 80 offers.
Yeah.
You just say no?
Yeah. So I would throw out offers, you know, trying. I was looking in Florida, trying to make offers. I was trying to create cash.
Okay.
You know, I learned of this concept called wholesaling.
Got it.
Where you get a great deal under contract, and then you sell that contract to somebody else.
You don't even buy the house.
No money. Like,
nothing.
So say I go to buy, you know, our friend's house down the street, 500 grand. It's worth 500 grand, but I get it for 400.
Uh-huh.
Maybe I sell you that for 450 because you still get $50,000 off, but then I make $50,000. That's a whole business that exists.
Yeah.
And it's all effort based. The thing that people don't realize is that you're going to run into 100, 200 people that will tell you no until you get to the point where you find that one that's like, yeah, let's do this. And it's just a game of numbers. Okay. You get better as you do it. You know, you get better with the reps.
Yeah.
But it takes a lot of rejection. And it's no different than in any other business. But people don't think about that. Like, when you start any business, is you're going to run into all these no's and you have to, like, figure out how to push forward so you get to this goal. That's what I did with real estate. I made 124 offers until the 124th was the one that set me up to a point that I could quit my job. And then I learned, I was like, okay, I can manufacture money. Like, I can create money. Let's do this full speed.
What are some of the vocabulary? This one's a big one for me because I think a barrier to a lot of cultures, whether it be, you know, where people live or cultures as far as industries, is vocabulary. And it's terms. It's just terms, right? And when you understand those terms, most of the time they're, my dad would say they're $5 words with 2 cent meanings. And once you understood the meaning of it, then you could have the conversation inside of it in real estate, in what it is that you do now. What are some of those terms that a person should know so they can get in the conversation?
So I'll be honest, there's times that I Google these things on the spot. So if some term or like a lot, there's a lot of calculations in real estate. If some, you know, math calculation comes up that I don't know off the top of my head, I'll punch it in Google. And I do it over and over again because I have a terrible memory. I told you I boxed in college. Like, I was hit too many times in the head.
Okay.
And so...
Only, you know, one time from the report card. I mean, if you would have had resilience, you would have taken another beating, and then some kids could have had...
You know, let's stand up that report card business again. Send me your report cards if you need a new one.
If you can do that,
this way.
He's going to have a one-page web page, and you have to deliver it in cash.
GeoCities.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
It's going to be an added bonus for you to with the real estate business. Okay.
I think the one that just keeps popping in my head is cash on cash return.
Okay.
So you're looking at different investments and it's a percentage based on the amount of money that you put in against how much money you get out at the end of the year.
Okay, but take me to a 12-year-old though, because what you just said, it eliminates a lot of people that were just listening.
That's
if they're not in real estate, and I hear this all the time, the cash on cash, or, you know, you'll hear about what's the cap rate and all these things. And when I looked these up, they were so simple.
But they're all math problems.
Yes. Right? Yeah. So take me to cash on cash, but I'm 12.
Yeah.
I'm Maddox, my son. Explain cash on cash return.
So cash on cash return is simply the amount of money you put in over the amount of money you get out in the year. It's a percentage.
Just in a year.
Correct.
Okay, give me an example.
So say you put in $10,000 to buy a home.
Got it.
But at the end of the year, you get you put in $100,000 and you get back $10,000 in the year.
That would be a 10%.
That's a 10% cash on cash return. Correct. Which is good. That's a good return. You know, if you invest in the stock market, you're probably looking at, 3-5% mm-hmm. right now on a good year. And so you get 10% cash on cash. Like, that's a good return on your money.
Got it.
That's a very baseline number that most people will look at.
Okay. What's another term that, you know?
Well, I know your favorite. Flex. I already know your favorite.
What's my favorite?
It's arbitrage.
Oh, dude. That one changed my game. That one changed the game. Arbitrage was my thing.
Just the difference between two numbers. That's it. That's all it is.
Why don't they say that? That's the thing that makes me mad is I was like, are you kidding? I remember I like bowling. Mm. And there's a term in bowling, dead wood in the ditch.
I don't know what that means.
Exactly. It's one pin that fell into the gutter. But to bowlers, dead wood in the ditch. Like, and you know, and when a person says that, you're like, you're a bowler. You're a real bowler. You know what I mean? I'm a real bowler. Like, I like it. I ain't trying to step over the line, get on the greasy spot. I'm trying to not bowl while the person next to me is bowling. That's just rude. But people do it all the time. Why do we make it so complicated? Is it to filter the people so they don't? Because I find it in the financial industry. I find it in real estate. I find it in a bunch of different ways. And I don't think it's negative. I don't think that it's in a negative side. But how does one engulf themselves so they don't seem like, lack of a better word, when I go into a new venture, I don't want to feel like an idiot. And sometimes when I go into a new place, I feel like an idiot because I don't know the terminology.
See, I think you'd be focused on the wrong things there. Because if you're going into...
It feels like judgment.
But if you're going into somewhere, right? Say you're going to a real estate meetup. And, yep. You know, I have students who talk to me about this. You know, I want to go to a real estate meetup. I got to make sure I've got my business cards. You know, I want to know my elevator pitch so they know exactly what I'm doing so I don't think I'm messing around.
Got it.
But I learned from a good friend, when you go to these things, you just go to make friends. And if your only goal there is to make friends... And you're not trying to pretend like, oh, I've got this portfolio or like I super know what I talk about. I'm going to make friends with you and I'm going to be honest. Hey, I don't know this, but I'm here to learn. Wow. And who's not going to accept that?
So just walking in and asking the questions, people in the environment, they're willing to give it to you?
You'll learn. But I think if you try to pretend like you're going to hit that barrier, but if you just go in there and said, hey, I'm Justin. I'm here to make friends. I'm brand new to real estate. You know, a little bit of an introvert. What's your name? And that's it. Like, and just make friends.
Okay, when you say introvert, I want to go into that because do you think the introvert is born or do you think that it's developed?
Ooh, I don't know. I think my wife will disagree with me, but so I feel like I'm an introvert. You know, like William was saying earlier, I don't speak a lot. Like, I don't.
Do you think that has to do with the way that you were raised, though, in your environment?
Maybe. I know a lot of times I was fearful of getting criticized, so I kind of keep things in.
Got it.
You know, even now with the book, I didn't tell many people. I think I told 5 people that I was writing a book before it was published because I wanted it. I didn't want criticism of the process. I was going to put the work in. I was like, I got up at 4:30, went to Starbucks. I was like, typing this. I don't need your opinion. I'm going to tell you about this when it's done. And so a lot of times I do withhold that kind of information just because – I don't want to hear the opinions, and so probably like that's probably why I'm an introvert as well.
Tell me about the empathy piece because there are the times. I mean, you have every right at the ripe old age of 34 to
the wise age of 34.
Yeah, the wise age to hear a person and they got challenges, kind of like when you were in high school. Remember when they are in grade school when they would say, "Oh my gosh, my infinity broke down," or my all the things, and you're like, "Are you kidding me?" You have almost a lifetime pass of, are you kidding me? Gas prices are high. Are you kidding me? Have you been to war? Oh man, I'm struggling with a relationship with my mom. She's not coming to Thanksgiving dinner. Are you kidding me? My mom slapped me across the face for 2 miles and then I punched her in the face. Like, how do you so gracefully have the empathy that you have in people's situations and not go into a judgment side? Because there is when the never outworked concept could be like, yo, get your dumb A up. I did it. You need to do it. And I find that that doesn't, I mean, it resonates with some people, but then it turns them into what they hated anyway.
Right. So 2 things on that. First, I learned that there is always someone who has your exact situation, but worse. You know, I've met people, like I remember when I was 19, I met a young woman whose mom was addicted to drugs, like abusive, depressed, and she was working to take care of that woman, like to make sure that she was housed and like would go grocery shopping and cook and do everything. And she was in a much worse situation than I was. So I learned that no matter what it is, the situation you're in, there is always going to be someone that's worse. But what really hit home with me was understanding that people's pain is a product of their scenario, you know? So understanding that whatever it is they're going through at that moment may very well be the worst thing that is going on, like that they've ever had to deal with. And that's not a negative. That's not, you don't want someone to have worser experiences, but understand what it feels like. You know what it feels like to be down and low and hurt because you have some memory that when you were there as well, you don't know what it's like or what that person's going through right now. And so it might seem, you know, juvenile, whatever it is they're speaking, because you're just comparing it to your life. But it's ridiculous to do that because they're not you. Like, these people aren't me, so why would I expect that you have, like, you would write off your own pain? I don't know, like, all of the circumstances. All I know it is that you're going through a hard time. I want to help. Like, that's it.
When was a paradigm shift for you? Because you went through a, hey, I'm angry, I'm going to go accomplish these things. And where did the paradigm shift for you where you started to say, I can't let this garbage fuel me anymore. I've got to start moving towards what I want as opposed to doing what I don't want.
For me, I'll be super vulnerable. I'll tell you, like, it was because it started to affect my marriage. I was having a hard time understanding how, like, I could be loved. You know, I was having a hard time accepting love because I was so angry and I had this, like, negative viewpoint on myself still. So understanding how this gorgeous woman could possibly still love me and accepting that, like, I ran into a point that I had to kind of face those demons and say, okay, what's really going on here? Like, let's really peel this back. Mm-hmm. Because if you don't, like, you're going to lose this woman.
How long were you in, as far as being married, when you started to realize that?
2 years.
Seriously?
Yeah. Well, I mean, my first year I was gone most of it. I'll tell you that. I was deployed. And so I was preparing to deploy. So I was probably gone 7-8 months out of our first year of marriage.
What does Drea not hear enough from you?
Drea doesn't hear enough. I'm going to go this
way. Am I allowed to call her Drea?
Yeah. She prefers Drea.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Okay. Because there's sometimes, like, I don't let people call me Kel.
Okay.
Only my brother.
Gotcha.
Not that I will fight someone because I'll get knocked out.
But that's his.
And especially, you got special warfare. You already flexed on that.
Right.
And triathlon.
And boxing.
Yeah. Well, okay. So let's just stop at let's stop at this because I'm feeling really bad about myself. But I mean, I would puff up and then I get knocked out. You know what I mean? That's my regiment. You know what I mean? But I got to at least show that I ain't letting, but I don't have people shorten my name. The only person that shortens my name is my brother, Rob. He knows. And he's like, hey, Kel. But someone will be like, hey, Kel. And I'll be like, you can't get the other syllable? You know what I mean? It's not that much energy. But is it everyone that calls her Drea? Or is it just like close friends?
Everyone calls her Drea.
Okay. Yeah. So I don't feel special. Can I call her Huntrea? What does Drea not hear enough from you?
Drea doesn't hear enough.
You said you were going to look at the camera.
I'm going to look at the camera,
too.
Because I got it. She's going to see it.
Gaze into her eyes. Gaze into her eyes. Make her, you know, get that 90s R&B where you.
Right.
Right there.
I don't know why I picture just like Craig David in the background.
Craig David?
You said 90s R&B, and so I just start thinking
Craig
of
David.
Like. Really?
Yeah. Craig David?
You know music.
Yeah, I'm just thinking Jodeci. That's fair. I'm thinking Silk. You know what I'm saying? I'm thinking Boys to Men.
I mean, you are like 20 years older than me, though, so I would go to like Ray J.
That's another one. Ray J? Man, come on.
It's a 20 years gap. There's a lot of music in there.
I'm questioning your credibility.
We're getting away from the important piece of your question.
What was the question?
About what Drea doesn't hear the most. Okay. That's not something I can skip over. This is the most important part of your
2000s
R&B. There we go. Thanks.
Right, there we go.
Right. Yeah, it's a good one. Ray J, One Wish.
I've never heard anyone refer to Ray J ever.
I love that song, One Wish. It's fantastic. Okay. Drea doesn't hear enough of how amazing she truly is. Like, she is a woman that just pushes love out into the world. And when we first met, that's what really attracted me to her, is because you see this just like aura about her. And I know you've seen it, is that you meet her and it draws you in because there's this warmness, there's this love. And it was something I had never experienced before. And so I was immediately attracted to her. But I don't people don't see it as much as I do. Like, there is something truly amazing. She's one of the most capable and creative and loving women, and that hasn't been shown to the world yet. But, you know, my goal, one of my biggest goals this year is to show that to her and then everybody else.
How will you show that goal? Or how will you show that?
What's cool about Never Outworked is, so if you look at the book, I wrote it. Drea made the cover, and my sister edited the whole book. So this was something that we got to do as a family. And it was just like a stepping stone. And because people see the cover and they're like, wow, that's really cool. How did you do that? And my wife made it. Like, Drea went through iteration of covers until we got to this one. And we're like, yep, that's the one. And she has that ability to just see the beauty in things that people don't. And she can see through to the inside and make something beautiful. And she can describe it to me completely. And I won't have a clue. Like, I don't have that vision. But she does. And as we build this out and as we kind of build this brand, I want to keep showcasing that so that not only does she get to see how amazing she is, but I get to show the world that too.
How important are people in this process? We've got a friend, James Dixon, that is an unbelievable human being. Talk to him on a day-to-day basis. I get 50 memes from him on Instagram that most of them I would never share with anybody.
He has a hidden sarcasm. It's hilarious.
But talk about that as far as the people, because I've seen some people see it as like, oh my gosh, Justin, you're blowing up. I don't see that. I see that you put in a ton of work, and now people are starting to recognize all the work that has been being put in. But how important are people on that journey?
It's everything. It is everything. I think, you know, when, like, let's talk about networking events. Like, people go to networking events to try to make some connections so that you can hit some goal or some achievement that you've got in your business. Like, you go with this idea, right?
Yeah.
And what I've realized is that all of the right people are starting to get put in my life of things that I didn't realize that I needed or things that I didn't want to that I realized just because I've focused more on creating those relationships and finding that friendship and bringing value into whatever room without asking or without looking for something. And that's why I told you earlier, when it came to what Never Outworked is or what it's growing to be, I've stopped trying to guess. You know, I thought at some point that, you know, when we were at Prosperity Camp and everyone's talking about coaching businesses and I love coaching people and I love helping people, I was like, yeah, like, let's do that. Coaching sounds right. But now if you ask me where Never Outwork's going, I have no idea, but I do know how much work and what I need to put in today to kind of continue to open this door up, because I have no idea, but I've been focused on putting in the work and building the relationships, and everything else has just been shown.
What do you say to the person who gets frustrated with that kind of comment where they're like, no, you have to have a focus and you have to have this thing and you have to focus on that and then you have to work the plan and you have to do all this stuff? And what I find is every time, for me, this is just me, every time I do that, I just get frustrated. My wife knows that I'm frustrated. My wife tells me to chill out. I stop trying. I start letting God do things. And then magic happens. And then the thing that sucks, Justin, is I don't get to take credit for it. Because I can't say to the person, oh, well, you do it like this.
But that's the best part. Because that's what you asked me about earlier, is how do you not hide behind all these accomplishments? Like, that's not me. It's like you said, working on the river and not trying to create a stream of income. You know, how do you work on yourself? There's a point in that we talk about in the book that you push yourself. So I took my brother on a bike ride the other day. So, like we talked about, I love to do triathlon. So I have like a very nice, like super light, fast bike.
Flex.
Right? Flex. Yeah. My other bike is like your normal commuter bike with a little kid seat on the back so that I can take my daughter out and we can go on bike rides.
And you beat your brother. You went on that bike and beat him on the other bike.
No. So I took, for my bike is fitted to me and he's like 6'3". So it doesn't really fit. So I put him on.
Excuses for giving him the booty bike?
I put him on my kid's bike, right? and then I have the really fast bike.
Okay.
And so we go on a bike ride, and I tell him, I say, 8 miles, it's super scenic, beautiful. Like, let's go at this. What I didn't tell him is it's 8 miles uphill. Like, it's 8 miles up this, what's called Glendora Mountain Road.
Yeah.
And it took us an hour and a half to get up it. And I left him. So I just went to the top. And I said, I'll meet you at the top. And then he gets up, super proud of him, because he's, like I said, the most capable dude that I know. And give him a huge hug, tell him I'm proud of him. And then we race back down, which is the most fun. It took me 20 minutes to get back down this mountain because you're just downhill going like 30, 40 miles per hour.
You got disc brakes on this bad boy?
No, I don't. But the point is, so we get into the car, and I ask him, I said, hey, when you're going up the hill, what was going through your mind? You know, and he was like,
my big brother.
Right. You know, and he was a little hesitant to share it with me. And so I said, you know, this is what I picture. First, you're going to be a little bit angry at me, right? Because you're in this like super heavy bike with a car seat on the back while I'm in this like sleek, fast bike. Then at some point you'll work past that and some like dark self-reflective thoughts will go through your head because you're tired, you're pushing, and you really have time to be with yourself. But then there's a point that you push past that, you kind of accept where you are, and you get the most clear thoughts of what you want to do with your life. And he said, yeah, like that's exactly what happened. And he told me like he thought about what he wanted with business. He thought about what he wanted with love, like what he wanted with life. And I told him, I was like, that's exactly where I wanted you to be. Like, that's exactly why we went on this. Most people don't push themselves that far to get that clarity of mind. But right where you're at, like, that's why I wanted to take you up this. I forget your original question, but, like, that's what I try to get people to when it comes to this idea of never outworked, is understanding. It doesn't have to be physical. Like, you might have some memory that you think back to where, you know, you were just completely drained emotionally and tired and you had nothing, right? Like you felt like you had nothing, but then like the thoughts, like the answers come, like the clarity of mind comes because it gets rid of all the noise. And then you figure out, okay, this is the direction I need to go. And that's all I'm pushing for right now, is I don't know where this is going. Mm-hmm. And I've accepted that, but I do know I need to continue to push myself into uncomfortable spaces and continue to speak, like continue to do social media, which I didn't have 7 months ago. Like, and as I do that, and as I focus on the relationships and focus on, you know, pushing myself further than I thought I could before, the other things start to show.
What are you resisting in your life right now?
And I'm like in full free fall right now. I'm way out of my comfort zone. So I don't know if there is a resistance at the moment, because everything I'm doing is something that at one point I was really uncomfortable doing. Like sharing all of those stories, way out of my comfort zone. I told you 7 months ago, I didn't have any social media. Now I have all the social medias. I got to do that better, you know, but I'm learning to kind of post more and be more and connect more. Because I've learned, like, in order for people to show or to hear this message, in order for me to really impact and connect with more people, like, social media is the way to do it. You know, speaking, never in a million years would you have asked if I would have thought that up.
What does very few, if no one, know about Justin?
I'm very self-conscious. You know, there's, before, I mean, we're good friends. And before I came to this, I was like, hey, honey, does this outfit work? Like, I'm doing Kelly's podcast. Like, is this a good one? You know, so understanding, like, I still have those negative thoughts that I have to think through. But they still exist. It doesn't just go away.
Are you going to get to a point where they won't exist? Because I think that's where a lot of people feel, is like, oh, well, if I do, you know, if I read the book and then I apply some of the principles, then I hit the yellow brick road and everything's going to be cool.
I don't know. You know, and the thing that I try to teach or try to show people is to get to a point where you're just unapologetically being yourself. Like, you're just full speed being you without any other outside influence. And you are the best person I know at that. So I want to ask you, like, do you still have negative thoughts that you work through?
Oh yeah.
Of course.
I was crying in my truck the other day. I was driving by myself, just, you know, I was sad about my pop, you know. I'm sad about my mom. I'm driving. And then, you know, you turn on the music that will add Ray to J, your tears. Yeah. Ray J. I didn't listen to Ray J. Actually, he's popped up. Now he's going to pop up on my social media because you said it. But it does. I mean, you do go through those kind of things. I mean, I don't give them a lot of weight, and I don't want them to, but they still exist. I mean, they still go through. I talked about this the other day. There was a guy that told me he stopped listening to me. And I said, why? And I was like, oh, I've offended him. He's like, no, because you're too positive and you're, my life is not like that. And I was like, dude, my life is not great. I mean, it's great because I choose it to be. What's the last time specifically recently that you struggled, like that you got some of those thoughts?
I called you. I was at the gym, or I was trying to get started in the day. And like, I like to wake up, go to the gym, workout, swim, run, bike, whatever.
Flex.
Right?
Okay.
And,
you're saying
and
you're
I could not, I couldn't get going.
Uh-huh.
I couldn't get my mind out of this negative place. And I know the dark thought, like the dark trail that my mind will go on,
Okay. You
know, and because I've visited enough and like I've seen that enough that I know all of the places that I would go. So I had to leave the gym and then just really ground myself. I went back, I got out my Bible, I read, I journaled. Called a friend and then went back later and redid the workout, you know, but I needed to recognize what was happening, stop, and then just kind of reground myself in, okay. Like, and the way I break my journal down is like God, gratitude, hunger. And so I'll read the Bible. I'll write about whatever I read about. I'll write whatever I'm thankful for in that moment, in that day. And then I'll write whatever I'm going after. And that's how I journal every single day. And I needed to ground myself again so that I wouldn't go down this trail.
How do you not let like the rituals and routine become the religion that you worship?
My routine is not as static as you'd think it would be. You know, I have an ideal day,
Okay. But
I also have two toddlers. Like, so the way that, like, if I told you how I want my day to go, that's not generally how it goes.
What have your kids taught you?
That, one, you've got to be flexible, and two, I've learned to just stop what I'm doing sometimes and just love on them. And because that's all they're ever seeking, like, whatever they're coming up to do, dinosaurs or... You know, my daughter really loves dinosaurs and airplanes right now. Mm-hmm. You know, so sometimes she's asking me to do something, but I'm like focused on my phone or my laptop and I'm trying to work. And she's like, Dad, like, let's play airplanes. Like, I need to stop what I'm doing and give that attention to her more. And so learning to really prioritize, mm-hmm, and make sure that they know that they're one of the most important things in my life is something I continually learn.
I'm the king of transitions. On your deathbed, Dre is there with you. Kids are there with you. You got three things to say to them, and then you pass. What is it?
It's like three statements. Just
could be words. You could flex on people like you do your friends.
True. Don't forget your dad was so awesome. Yeah.
He never sold one report card, right. But you know what, kids? Stick to your dreams.
Remember.
Unless you're not willing to see it through.
You know, I think the one thing that I really hope for my girls is that they're just unapologetically themselves, like full speed, without any restraint. You know, without any worry, and just fully give that love out to the world, you know, because once you start to hit that stride and you really start to open that up is what enables you to let other people shine and to love other people.
So, you know why I started the podcast, because of my two kids, Maddox and McKenna, and I didn't want them to worship idols. I wanted them to be inspired by icons. I think you're an icon in my life, not because of the things that you've done, but because of the guy that you are. And I've seen you on stage. I've seen you in places where people talk about the deals that you do and the, you know, hundreds of thousands that you manufacture and you do all these things. For me, none of that stuff mattered. What mattered was I got a chance to be able to connect with you, laugh with you, have a good time. And so that's why I think that you're an icon in my life. And I want to make sure that I recognize it, but I define it, because my brother was big on me. He said, why is that person iconic to you? And is it because they made money? Is it because they did the deal? And I said, no, 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 it wasn't that. It was the way that they made me feel and the way that they make others feel. And you do that, Justin. So what advice would you have for Maddox and McKenna? And if you could use both their names, it would be awesome.
Well, Maddox and McKenna, I am envious that you get to learn from your dad all the time, because when I give an example of people that are unapologetically themselves, I always refer to your dad. And so if I can give you any advice, it's going to be two things you've already heard, and I'm going to repeat your uncle on one of them. Is one is beat everyone, because I loved it and I thought that was the greatest advice ever. And then two, unapologetically be yourself full speed all the time.
If you haven't got the book, it's out right now. You need to go and get the book. Justin's book is phenomenal, not because the techniques or things like that, which it has in it, but the heart of the person. And when they get to know you, I believe that, I mean, this is a recipe. This is a recipe if you're willing to start to look at yourself and you're willing to make things better. This is an incredible, incredible blueprint. And so if you don't have it, check it out. It's on Amazon, am I correct?
Yes.
So on Amazon, or you can order it on a one-page web page that he has up, and you could deliver the $20 to his house.
Geocities.com,
yeah. Yeah, you could do that. You could do that. I think the website is going to go live later today. Yeah,
geocities.com/Justin/NeverOutWork. Yeah, that's how they work.
Do me a favor, though, and I've never asked anyone this, but you've been really consistent with listening to the Corresponding Proverb Corresponding Day. And there's been times where people have come up against it and been like, oh, well, why are you going down that road? Not everyone needs to hear about God or whatever it is. And I'm like, it's not for me. The Corresponding Proverb Corresponding Day, it's not just about that. It's about the principle part. How has it helped you?
Twofold. One, so I try to read and journal before I listen to what you say about it.
Okay.
Because I will often take it way differently than how you say it on the podcast. And so it's great for me, because not only do I get to hear how I take it, but I get to hear how you take it. Mm-hmm. And like you said, maybe next month I'll receive it differently, but at least I know in that moment, in that day, that, well, Kelly received it differently than me, but we're still on this path together.
Look into the camera here. Talk to all the veterans out there that maybe you're transitioning out of the military right now or in the military right now, and maybe have a little conversation with them.
The thing I want to tell all veterans is that you've already done things that most people would look at as impossible. You've already accomplish so much more than you'll ever be able to put on your resume. So don't limit yourself. Don't think that you can only do X, Y, and Z because that's what comes out of this piece of paper. Understand you're so much more capable than that could ever be shown in a resume.
Justin, you're incredible, man. It's been awesome to be able to spend time. I mean, I'm going to force you to be my friend for the rest of your life. You already know
forever.
That.
Yep.
And I want to have you on more because I want to see this as it develops. You know, what you're doing, your speaking career. And for those of you out there, if you own a company, you're a part of an organization, you have a conference, have this guy come and speak. I mean, when I say that, I don't say that about a lot of people, but I do with you because I know that you're going to deliver not only a phenomenal message, but you're going to deliver it with heart and soul, which I think the world needs more of, man. And
thank you.
Drea, you're a good woman. Thank you for allowing me. Oh, my bad. Andrea. What's her middle name?
Actually, that is her middle name.
Oh, it is? Okay. What's her first name then?
Lihia.
What is it?
So most people don't know that. Her first name is Lihia. Her middle name is Andrea. Yeah.
Lihia. So I'm going to call you that from now on. But I want to thank you for being on the show, man. You've been incredible. Absolutely incredible, man.
Thank you.
You're officially
off the hot seat.
The hot seat.